Haines Assembly examines user capacity on the Chilkat River, and News Project Alaska Water Wars examines the Pebble Mine. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Barrett Wilbur. Those stories and more up next. At a committee meeting, the Haines Assembly agreed to expand one guide company's rafting permit on the Chilkat River. But they also opened a bigger conversation about how to define the river's capacity in the future. When Rainbow Glacier Adventures asked the Assembly to expand their permit so they could take larger groups rafting on the Chilkat, they opened up a series of questions. Competing guide companies said the river was reaching capacity. Members of the public were worried about fish. Would more people at the launch site ruin spawning and fishing at a clear pool nearby? Assembly members wanted to support new and sustainable business, but not to the detriment of the river. They met at a committee of the whole to keep talking. Fish concerns were resolved quickly, thanks to a letter from Haines' habitat biologist, which Assembly member Tom Morfitt read aloud. The relatively small increase of people at the launch site was insignificant to fish, she wrote. They don't spawn in the pool. And besides,
it doesn't matter if rafts are put in and out of the pond for the next couple of years, since DOT will be filling more than half the pond during the Haines Highway reconstruction.
She suggested the Assembly consider new, perhaps permanent structures to get rafts in the river. They could decongest river access without eroding the banks and be planned in conjunction with the road project. Assembly members liked that suggestion. So did guiding businesses, many of whom were in the audience. Andy Hedden, with the Haines Rafting Company, said they'd welcome improvements, but the state had been unwilling to agree to permanent infrastructure in the past.
As the industry's grown, it's getting crowded. It's a great opportunity for you guys to help the industry out by putting a little pressure, maybe writing a letter to ADF&G, DOT, and state parks, because those three entities are the ones that hold the keys to actually developing some reliable spots.
But launch sites aren't the only element of determining the river's total capacity. No one at the meeting was exactly sure how to define that. Morfitt summed up what most of the Assembly seemed to think.
There has been little brush fires on this issue for the past 5 to 7 years. It seems to me like we should have some kind of holistic look at all those places and who's using them and what the capacity is, and so we don't get bottled up every time somebody wants a new tour.
At the last meeting, Chilkat River guides said the river was already reaching capacity. Joe Ordonez, who owns Rainbow Glacier Adventures, disagrees.
I think you're only hearing it from the largest company there, from Chilkat Guides. I don't think Andy or I will tell you that's anywhere near capacity.
Deborah Schnabel, the borough manager, stepped in and said regulations about capacity should not be the responsibility of guides to decide.
Certainly they can be helpful in gaining an understanding and appreciation for what's happening on the river. But for a permittee to announce to the Assembly that the river's at capacity, I think is a little, we have to look at that ourselves.
Assembly member Heather Lundy suggested the Transportation Committee look into it, so the borough could eventually draw up new regulations that would stop the river from being a free-for-all.
You know, we can grant Joe's permit, but I think we should get this figured out before we grant more on the Chilkat River if we're hearing from operators that they're at capacity, even if we can't define that.
State agencies, guiding companies, the Bald Eagle Preserve Advisory Council, and local users were all mentioned as stakeholders. Hedden, with Haines Rafting, said it was worth treading carefully when drawing state agencies into the conversation.
The state so far has shown the willingness to have much greater capacities than we as a community are generally comfortable with. If you establish that the capacity of the river is infinite.
Assembly member Stephanie Scott pointed out the state charges tours that run through the Chilkat Bald Eagle Preserve, so they could be less interested in limiting access. Or as Heather Lundy put it,
more the merrier.
The Assembly can't take any official action at committee meetings, so they didn't move to make any of their ideas concrete. But they left with specific intent. Start reaching out to other river stakeholders to determine capacity and improve launch sites. As for Rainbow Glacier Adventures, who started the whole discussion, the Assembly agreed they should get the permit they're looking for. In Haines, I'm Barrett Wilbur.
This is Alaska Water Wars, a news project sharing the stories of Alaska Native people and the prospect of large natural resource development projects coming to their homelands. This five-part series focuses on the Pebble Mine project near Bristol Bay. Dacia Eaton reports.
Communities near the fishing industry of Bristol Bay are larger and often have more seasonal and year-round work opportunities than those inland near the proposed Pebble Mine. And some residents, despite concerns about possible impacts to water quality, are eager to take jobs on related infrastructure projects that would be the mine's foundation. Clinton Hobson plugs exploration drill holes that are leaking water at the Pebble Mine site, where its rolling tundra streams and lakes as far as the eye can see.
It's hard work, but hey, it's a job.
Hobson is Athabascan Alaska Native. He lives about 50 miles across Lake Iliamna from the mine site in the tiny village of Kakanak, where jobs are scarce. He says he's happy to have the work.
I got bills to pay. Gas ain't cheap in the village, electricity ain't cheap, oil ain't cheap to heat the house. There's nothing cheap in the village.
Gas, electricity, and oil can be up to four times prices in the lower 48. Store-bought food is expensive, too. And hunting and fishing are key to food security. Asked whether he shared concerns about the development's possible impacts to fish with others in the area, he said,
"There's nothing to say on that. That's up to them. I'm just here just trying to get some work done, trying to make some money for the family there, support them."
He makes almost $20 per hour in the seasonal job. Outside Kakanak, Brad Anguson, who works for the Alaska Peninsula Corporation, shows off a project that sprung up in an old gravel pit over the summer.
This is the Kakanak Man Camp. There's approximately about 12 to 15 tents here. We've got a nice lakefront view of Lake Iliamna in front. You've got the mountains behind us.
Anguson is Sukpiak, a Lutik Alaska Native, originally from South Naknek, and now lives in Anchorage. His mother's family is from Kakanak, a community of about 170 Yupik, Sukpiak, and Athabascan Alaska Native people. Kakanak is in the Lake and Peninsula Borough, where the unemployment rate fluctuates from a low of around 9% in summer to a high of 16% in midwinter. And even if they don't want to work directly for the mining company, many residents are desperate for jobs to help them stay in their villages. The village corporation that Anguson works for represents Kakanak and four other villages in the area. Some of those villages, he says, are on the verge of disappearing.
Alaska Peninsula Corporation has villages that are what I consider to be nearing the brink of abandonment. And we know that poor economy and lack of infrastructure are elements that contributed to those communities' current situation.
Anguson says the mining company came to Alaska Peninsula Corporation about building the camp. The corporation quickly saw employment opportunities materialize. The camp employed 15 residents this summer. 27-year-old Nicholas Mike, who is Yupik, is one of them. After the Marine Corps, he came home to find only spotty part-time work. Until this summer, Mike says he makes $20 per hour and the money is critical to support his family.
Well, it means a lot. I get to stay home close to family. I don't have to deal with traffic in Anchorage.
Mike says he's neutral on Pebble. Although he's grateful for the work, he does see one drawback, though.
I haven't been able to really do any subsistence this summer.
Anguson says he knows that developing the mine is a risk to the area's pristine waters, but he hopes it can be done safely and dramatically change the economic outlook for the region. In Anchorage, I'm Dacia Eaton.
Next time on Alaska's Water Wars, hear from an attorney helping tribes fight mining in Bristol Bay.
This is the equivalent of pushing the Lakota out of the Black Hills to mine for gold. This is the equivalent of pushing the Plains Indians out, killing off all the buffalo.
Alaska Water Wars is a multimedia project produced by reporter Dacia Eaton and photographer Brian Adams. Funding for this project comes from the Alaska Humanities Forum in partnership with KMBA and Kewaunik Broadcast Corporation. Learn more at alaskawaterwars.org or KNBA.org.
For KHNS News, I'm Barrett Wilbur. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org. Thanks for listening this evening.